Welcome to the session today. This is going to be much shorter than the Chopin one because the piece is much shorter. Chopin took about 40 minutes to play, and this is about 20 minutes long. Samuel Barber was one of the most important composers, American composers of the 20th century. He was born in 1910, exactly, by the way, a century after Chopin was born in 1810. He showed promise, musical promise, as a very young child, took the usual piano lessons and everything. And his parents in Westchester, Pennsylvania, wanted him to be a very normal kid, you know, play sports and all that. And so at the age of 9, he wrote his mother a letter. He said, "Dear mother, I just want you to know something that's really been troubling me a lot, and that is, I will never be an athlete. I am meant to be a composer." He already had figured that out about himself. He started composing things at that age and continued his studies, I think supported by his parents throughout high school. He was accepted at the Curtis Institute in Philadelphia, which is sort of a college level conservatory, but he was accepted, I believe, at age 14. And he studied piano and composition during his time there. He also met his life companion, Giancarlo Menotti, who was also a student there. And you know, we all know Menotti because he wrote Amal and the Night Visitors. Right. So they were lifelong companions and clearly devoted to each other. Samuel Barber had a very simple life. He essentially just wrote music, not a huge amount, because if he would write a symphony or a song cycle, that would be enough in that form. And he didn't repeat himself. He didn't write several song cycles. He wrote one. He wrote a symphony. Well, he did a number of symphonic things, but not Symphony Number 7 or Symphony Number 8. He was a wonderful pianist himself, although he didn't really perform, to my knowledge. He wrote these four piano pieces in around 1944. They were published in 1945, and he would have been 35, 34 at the time that he wrote them, whereas Chopin was in his late 20s when he wrote the Preludes. So many of the great works of the great composers are the music and the talent is all there early in life. It's not something that comes later on with experience. It's just there. The excursions are not real well known. I rarely see them on programs, but they're just four gems. He called them excursions, and they are really excursions into the American idiom. Each one a different journey. They were published in 1945, and at that same time, many other composers seem to have been interested in Americana-type themes. Appalachian Spring of Aaron Copland was written around that time, as one example. There was just a fascination with not only the idioms of various kinds of American music, but with the feelings that accompanied those different parts of American life. Maybe it had something to do with World War II and realizing what America stood for and wanting to express that in the music, I don't know. So the four excursions are these. Number one is sort of like a train ride. And you can hear the, maybe, yeah, you can hear the train going along the track. And lots of different things happen, maybe outside the window if you look out. At the very end, you can hear the train whistle.
Of course.
And that's pretty much the piece. So while I'm playing this, see what you see out the window in the different parts of the piece. Thank you. particular out the window a lot.
I was too tense.
Yeah.
Tense piece. I thought there was a murder going on.
Oh, well. It wasn't all happy.
Until the end.
Railroad crossings.
What?
Railroad crossings.
Oh.
Cross cars.
Oh, yeah.
Car is speeding on the highway next to the train.
Exactly.
Yes, uh-huh. It will.
Yeah. Right. I was thinking galloping horses.
Oh.
And I thought maybe. And I thought maybe other trains.
Oh.
I had two of them trains.
The different whistles.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, right at the end.
So what do you see?
Oh, I don't. I still don't know. Oh, there's some 16s coming up. they're very fun pieces to play. Uh-huh. Number two is a blues, and maybe the train took us to New Orleans or something like that. I don't know. Thank you. certainly wasn't a jazz musician, and it's sort of a classical interpretation of a blues, but I think it's a very successful one. It gets a lot of blue notes in there.
It had, in my, it felt a little West Side Story-ish. I mean, I thought, you know, Officer Krupke, they could play that when he's walking down his beat looking for all the guys.
Absolutely. Oh, gee, that's great. Yeah.
There's a place or two in there where it almost feels Gershwin.
Yeah.
Decidedly not Gershwin.
Yeah.
Just about the time you get that feel, it does something very different.
Yeah. The third one is, from a musical standpoint, the most interesting. It's a set of variations on the song The Streets of Laredo. Do you know the song, The Streets?
Yeah.
As I walked out in the streets of Laredo, as I walked out in Laredo one day, I saw an old cowboy all dressed in white linen, dressed in white linen as cold as the clay. And you all know the Smothers Brothers version.
I see by your outfit that you are a cowboy.
I see by your outfit you are a cowboy too.
We see by our outfits that we are both cowboys.
If you get an outfit, you can be a cowboy too. Those are not the original ones.
Younger crowd would say, "Who are the Smothers Brothers?"
Yeah, they go back pretty far.
Yes, they do.
So anyway, this is number three of the excursions. And the thing that makes it musically interesting is that there's this walking figure. Which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. And against that, against the four beats, the right hand has 7 equal notes. So that means they're, except for the first note, they're never quite together. You have 7 against 8, essentially, for a good part.
What is the time signature?
4-4. Oh, no, actually, it's cut time. It's 2-2. There's two beats per bar, which means there's 3.5 of those 7 notes in each beat.
Thank you.
it's a Western song.
When you first start playing a song like that, how do you know if you got a wrong note?
I like that question. It sounds like you may not recognize when I do. Well, it's just like any piece. You learn them very slowly, and you know what the right notes are.
But, I mean, life has its regularities to it. And you sit down and play like something like that, as there's absolutely no regularity, at least there appears to be regularity at all. So you have to kind of totally reshift your brain.
Well, that sounds hard. I never really thought about that.
It's regularly irregular.
Actually, it isn't. Because I simplified what he's doing. He has 8 notes per bar in the left hand, but sometimes it's 9. And so even that is always changing. But I remember learning this. I was 16 at the time, and I think my music teacher had a great deal of confidence in my abilities to assign this piece to me, because it was a challenge to try to figure out all those irregularities. But I was excited by that challenge.
Oh.
So did you learn it one hand at a time and then put them together?
Yeah. I knew that the first note of the 7 came with the first note of the 8. And I know that the last note of the 7 should come a little bit before the last note of the 8. And each of the successive notes should be just a little bit further after the notes in the left hand. So that kind of simplified it, didn't
it? Easy for you to say.
How do the challenges of that compare with, say, playing some of the Debussy stuff that's 3-2?
Oh, that's a piece of cake, 3-2 in Debussy, compared to that. Yeah, this is much more difficult.
How about world peace?
That's hard. That's hard. Without a doubt. Okay. By the way, Samuel Barber had probably his most famous piece is the Adagio for Strings, which he did write when he was 26. That piece has expressed, has been the theme for any tragic event in American history. They play that almost invariably. Mm-hmm. And it captures that kind of grief almost better than any other piece that's been written. Mm-hmm. He wrote an opera which no one knows, but it was very successful. It was called Vanessa, fairly young, early in life, and that was a big success. But then later on, in 1962, I believe, when the Lincoln Center opened with the Metropolitan Opera, I think that was Philharmonic Hall, it was 64 that the Metropolitan Opera opened. And they commissioned Samuel Barber to write a new opera for the first performance, the opening of the Metropolitan Opera House. And that was Antony and Cleopatra. And it bombed. Mm-hmm. And was not received well. And he became very bitter after that and sort of retired from public life. He and Giancarlo Menotti lived in a suburb of New York called Mount Kisco, and he sort of retired there, became quite alcoholic, and died at the age of 71. So it was a life cut short by unexpected failure. And I always felt that we deserved to have more compositions from Samuel Barber than we got. Which brings us to the cheerful last one, number four, which is cheerful. This is a hoedown.
Is there a thing that you like to do more than others? I mean, these little things or these little things? Or
no, it's scales. One of the joys of playing repertoire like this are the challenges that it brings to you and how to solve them. So I've always enjoyed those challenges. Mm-hmm.
So have we.
As long as you're doing it.
I've really enjoyed both the Chopin and today, and I'm curious, are there other composers that you really enjoy playing as well?
Yes, these are not my favorite composers, but my favorite composers are Brahms, which Tamara and I will be playing one of his sonatas for violin and piano at the concert tonight. So I'm looking forward to that. And Bach, Schubert. I'm really a classicist. Those are the big ones for me. But I also enjoy anything 20th century. I haven't played anything 21st century except choral music. But not piano music. But I think there's something playing music that's contemporary to your own life that makes it immediately, you understand what's going on. And it's relevant to your life in a way that that older music is not. So I always have enjoyed doing contemporary music.
So how were you like Samuel Barber? You're younger. Were you, did you know that you wanted to play the piano from the age of 9 or 6 or something like that?
And no sports.
Or, yeah. Were you in football?
No, my brother was, my younger brother, and and he practiced being a quarterback by throwing footballs to me. And so that was the height of my athletic career, throwing them back. And, always loved music, and I remember as a little kid sitting in church up in the choir loft with my mother, who sang in the choir, watching the organist and playing and watching him play the pedals, because everyone's always fascinated by the pedals. And so I thought, wow, that's great. I love that. And but I didn't have an innate desire to play other than the things that kids fool around with, if there was a piano in the house, until we lived in Manhattan, Kansas at the time. And in third grade, they gave, the public schools, they gave everybody a music aptitude test. And I remember going into a room and them playing notes on this electronic thing, gizmo. And evidently I did really well on it, because teacher told me that, they told my parents, you know, this kid should take some music lessons. So I did, and my father was a pastor in town, the town gown congregation for K-State College at that time. And he didn't know a lot about music, so he went to the head of the music department at K-State College and said, my kid this evidently has some talent, and so I'm looking for a piano teacher for him. And the guy said, well, I'll teach him. So my first piano teacher was the head of the music department at K-State College. And his office, his studio, was on the landing of this old building, and it was a very dark room with two grand pianos that you could barely see, and there was a little light over one of them. And he had some eye damage, and so he wore these glasses that made his eyes look like owl eyes. And that was my introduction to studying music. And he gave me, in my first year, Czerny exercises, Bartok microcosmos exercises, and pieces by Bach and Chopin. So it was not a gradual introduction to things, you know, adding notes with each week. It was like this. I loved it, obviously, and was fortunate to get very excellent teachers all the way through high school, and that's all I wanted to do from about age 12 on. People would ask me what I wanted to do. I said I want to be a concert pianist. Yeah. And fortunately, as things worked out, I had opportunities to perform, which doesn't happen to everybody. So I was very fortunate.
Thank you.
So thank you all. If you want to hear all this again, I'll be playing. We're going to do I'll do the Barber Excursions at the beginning of the program tonight. Then we'll do the Brahms Violin Sonata, and then I'll do the Chopin Preludes again. So if you want to hear,
it's going to be here.
Here, it'll be here. Yeah. Okay.
So we won't have a bowling alley underneath us.
We thought it would be best. Although I prefer to play that piano, the bowling alley sound just doesn't. Maybe it would add to the barber, I think.
Yeah.